Well, good afternoon and welcome to this joint celebration of the King and Rock and Roll, Elvis Presley's 79th birthday, and even more importantly, a celebration of everything that we've accomplished in the last year in the American Diabetes Association, government affairs, and advocacy work, and as well as celebrating what our priorities and plans are for 2014. As we get started, I'd first of all like to thank those of you who've submitted questions and encourage any of you to send questions or comments from your screen to ours throughout the webinar. You can just use the chat box that's at the lower left-hand corner of your screen. We'll address as many questions as we can either during the presentation or at the end during the Q&A session. And if we have more questions than we can cover in our 75 minutes today, we'll just address those in follow-up postings to our listserv. With your final reminder email today, you got a copy of today's 33 slides, 6 to a page. So if you're having trouble logging in for the web portion of this, you might want to pull that up and look at it on your screen or print it quickly so that you can see the slides. After the webinar, we'll have a survey at the end of the broadcast. After filling out that survey, you will get a shorter version, which is 19 slides versus the 33 that we're presenting on right now. And that short version is really what is meant to be used in the presentations for the community leadership boards. We understand that, you know, it's more important for you all to have more detail than the average community leadership board member. As you can see from the names on this slide, we've got a great group of very experienced volunteers who are facilitating the webinar today. And while I certainly want to start out with thanking each of them, in the interest of time, I'll let the introductions happen as we move through the webinar. And so first up, we've got Gina Gablach, who's our esteemed, very dedicated, and enthusiastic chair of our National Advocacy Committee. Gina happens to be a big Elvis fan. She didn't know that I was doing this Elvis theme until this morning, but she's rolling with it. And Gina has been known to get all shook up about advocacy more than just a time or two. So with that, Gina, rock and roll.
Thanks, Maren. I'm really excited to be on today's call with everybody, and together as advocacy leaders, we are launching our 2014 advocacy efforts. Today's webinar, we have two purposes. We want to make sure that all of us in the ADA advocacy leadership are up to speed with regards to what our priorities are, and then we also want to make sure that we're able to help those of you who are local advocacy chairs of your community leadership boards prepare for your presentation on advocacy and our 2014 priorities at your first CLB meeting. So before we go any further, I want to take a moment here so that we can see who is on today's call with us. So if everybody could take a moment to go ahead and mark whichever box or boxes is appropriate for you for the position that you hold. All right, it looks like we have a good variety of folks who have joined us today, so I'm very excited about that. It's great to have people from all different backgrounds who come at advocacy from a variety of different angles to be able to work together on our advocacy priorities with. So with that said, what we'd like to do is go over what are going to be really important pieces for people to be able to share both with their community leadership boards but also with people in your community about what advocacy is at the American Diabetes Association. And on this side, you'll see a really important piece that you're going to want to share at your community leadership boards, and this is going to be the 2013 Advocacy Accomplishment Document. This document is almost completed and is actually going to be emailed to you within the next couple of weeks by Maren. So if you don't see that by the end of January, please make sure that you reach out to Maren to let her know that you have not received the 2013 advocacy accomplishments. The most important thing with this piece is going to be to please make sure that you print and share this with all members of your community leadership board. This piece is really great as it highlights our advocacy successes, But I think more importantly, it helps to create a picture of what advocacy looks like and why it's important. And we also want to make sure, remember that as advocacy leaders, this is also a great piece to make sure that you're sharing with others throughout the year. And also please make sure to encourage your community leadership board members to also share this document with people as they're talking about the association and different ways to get involved with the ADA. You're not going to have enough time to cover all the details and all of the accomplishments that are listed on this document. So what I would really suggest that you do is consider choosing two or three items that you feel are especially relevant or of interest to your local CLB. The beauty of doing that is it brings it home, it makes it more personal, and it helps people connect better. To get us started, what I'd like to do is we're going to highlight a couple of our 2013 successes. And one of the big things that we always really like to talk about are our Safe at School victories. And we have had so many of those in 2013. Through legislation in Arizona and Missouri and the unanimous decision by the California Supreme Court in 2013, we added three states to our list of those meeting the key tenets of ADA Safe at School campaign. And we know those three main tenets are making sure that if there's not a school nurse available, that someone is available to trained and available to administer insulin, to administer glucagon, and for children who are able to self-manage, that they're allowed to self-manage wherever they're at in the school. Based on our current strategic plan, which is 2012 through 2015, it calls for adding 12 states. And at this time, we've already added 7 since our plan began in 2012. So for that, I think it's a very great accomplishment that we've seen in 2013, and I look forward to many more great Safe at School successes. And I'm going to go back because one of the other big things is not just working on Safe at School in the schools themselves, but another really important piece is getting the word out so that other people know what we're doing. And we're doing a great job with that. Efforts to promote our Safe at School and the California Supreme Court decision generated more than 250 million media impressions that were overwhelmingly positive for the ADA's position. And in addition, a Safe at School radio media tour was conducted in both English and Spanish and reached 12.8 million listeners with close to 2,500 airings on almost 1,500 stations in 6 states. So it's incredibly important that we're sharing our successes with everybody so that they can see not only what ADA is, but why advocacy is so important. School isn't the only place that we've been successful. We've also fought unfair treatment for people with diabetes in a variety of different places. And ADA continues to lead efforts in promoting equal employment opportunities for people with diabetes. Litigation against a large motor coach bus company resulted in the development of a new policy to individually assess bus drivers with non-insulin-treated diabetes. It's important to keep in mind that individually assessed part. This was a major victory, eliminating blanket bans by replacing them with the individual assessment. And this is something that ADA really, really strives for. This has both nationwide implications, both inside and outside of the companies that was involved. And in addition to our combined collaborations with the Philadelphia and New York police departments, we initiated a very ambitious campaign to educate law enforcement personnel about diabetes. Advocates from 28 states reached 185 different law enforcement agencies with educational materials about diabetes and also policing. I think what's really important to know, too, is that actually was launched. It was either the end of summer or beginning of fall. So in that short period of time, we were able to reach 185 different law enforcement agencies. And this is a really great start to ADA's Jailhouse Rock. Last year, we were able to strengthen our voices on Capitol Hill, at the state capitals, and in the administration through our call to Congress 2013 and also other targeted federal lobby visits. Through our roles in the beginning, a coalition of groups to support funding for NIDDK, which is the National Institutes of Diabetes, Digestive, and Kidney Diseases, we further strengthened our voice on behalf of people with diabetes. Something I'm very, very excited about is the significant increase in the number of in-district meetings that advocates had with members of Congress during their 2013 August recess. To me, this is incredibly important because this is a huge block for us to be able to build from. This was a great start, and this is something that we're going to see continuing in 2014. And speaking of 2014, we will be counting on local advocates to support. Advocates will be attending the American Diabetes Association's Capitol Hill Advocacy Day, which will be conducted in March. These advocates will meet with key members of the Appropriations Committee. And for those who are not going to be attending the Capitol Hill Advocacy Day, advocates from across the country will be invited to phone in to share ADA's message to Congress to provide the funds needed to stop diabetes. And in addition, we'll be building greater capacity to support hometown advocates in meetings with members of Congress during their recesses at any time of year. And that's what I referenced a little bit earlier. So in addition to those August recess meetings that we have in our Advocates in Action calendar, we're looking now to help people move to the next level where they're able to meet with their members of Congress whenever and wherever their members are at. So at this time, I'd like to turn things over to Dr. Eduardo Colon, who's the Vice Chair of the Latino Diabetes Action Council, to share some more of our 2013 advocacy accomplishments and also our 2014 plans. Dr. Colon?
Good afternoon. As mentioned, my name is Dr. Eduardo Colon, and I come to you from Minneapolis, and it's finally above zero. It's 1 degree today, so I'm all shook up. I'm the Vice Chair of the Latino American Diabetes Action Council, and I'm excited to share with you the tremendous accomplishments our Tri-Council collectively achieved in 2013 as we look forward to the opportunities to advocate for ending disparities in 2014. But before I start, let me explain. The Tri-Council currently includes three population-specific groups working to address health disparities. The Latino American Diabetes Action Council, the African American Diabetes Action Council, and the Asian-Pacific American Diabetes Action Council. We know racial and ethnic minority populations are at significant higher risk for both diabetes and its complications. And tragically, many people from minority communities face inequities when attempting to obtain the care they need to prevent or to manage their diabetes. We support legislation and programs with the goal of eliminating health disparities. In 2013, for the first year, the April focus for Advocates in Action was on engaging high-risk communities in local advocacy effort. A webinar for advocacy volunteers and field-based staff was facilitated by several members of our Tri-Council, and the webinar highlighted both challenges and strategies for engaging high-risk community members. If you missed that webinar, I'd encourage you to check out the recorded webinar, which can be accessed by looking for the training link at www.diabetes.org/hometownadvocacy, or by using the direct link URL on the screen. That's www.diabetes.org/hometownadvocacy, or the direct link URL on the screen. In April of this year, the Advocates in Action focus will be the same, and our 2014 April webinar will build on the 2013 efforts. Watch for your invitation. You're not going to want to miss it. In 2013, the Tri-Council focused on building collaborations with key organizations within our respective communities and building our capacity to impact the diabetes advocacy goals that hit home in those communities. Tri-Council members took part in over a dozen high-level opportunities to educate policymakers and stakeholders about diabetes in high-risk communities, including activities involving the League of United Latin American Citizens, National Medical Association, National Hispanic Medical Association, National Council of La Raza, National Association of Black Journalists, Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islanders Diabetes Coalition, and the Congressional Black Caucus. Improving access to care is a priority for all people with diabetes, and is a key strategy to reducing health disparities. In the fall of 2013, the association embarked on an aggressive campaign to get the word out about upcoming changes in health insurance, including a broad distribution of two flyers intended for people with diabetes and healthcare providers. One was the Q&A on health insurance marketplaces, which is available at www.diabetes.org/healthinsurancemarketplaces. The other was an information update on changes to health insurance rules, which impact people with diabetes, available also at www.diabetes.org/healthinsurance-update-2014. These two documents have been distributed in many ways, including through our website, at our association events and programs, and through our strategic partners. So, throughout my remarks, you've heard me remark, you heard me refer to the Tri-Council, which up until now has included councils for Latinos, African Americans, and Asian Pacific Americans. For many years, the association advocacy work on behalf of Native Americans has been done as one part of the focus of a broad community program called Awakening the Spirit. And going forward, Awakening the Spirit will continue its robust outreach programming for the Native American community. However, beginning this year, I'm thrilled to say that the advocacy of the association will also have its own in-house council focused on Native Americans. And in a similar way that the other action councils work with their community program partners, this Native Americans Alaskan Native Diabetes Action Council will, of course, coordinate efforts closely with Awakening the Spirit staff and volunteers. And now I'll turn it back to Gina to talk about how we developed our 2013 legislative priorities, which will include a commitment to end health disparities in all areas.
Thank you so much, Dr. Colon. For those of you who are advocacy chairs, I want you to remember to please begin your community leadership, your presentation for your community leadership board by making sure that your CLB members truly understand the big picture of what our advocacy work is and how it fits in with our mission. It's really important to explain that the four advocacy goals that are shown on this slide are the association's main area of focus. And in all things that we do, we're looking to increase federal and state funding for diabetes prevention, treatment, and research. We're looking to prevent diabetes, to improve the availability of accessible, adequate, and affordable health care, and also to make discrimination go away. For the next three slides, I'm going to provide you with more information on the process, more information that you'll have time to share in a typical CLB meeting, but I wanted to make sure that you were prepared in case you were asked any questions. The bottom line is that ADA is asked to work on a great number of issues, so we count on our volunteers and staff around the country to provide input to develop a set of annual priorities. For our day-to-day work in influencing public policy, we need to translate those four very broad goals into specific actions and relate them to the legislative efforts and the strategies. Our legislative priorities for 2014 were determined last fall based upon a call for input from volunteers and staff around the country. And I'm sure many of you who are on this call provided input for that, and that's so incredibly important to the process now and as we move forward. The legislative subcommittee, which is a subgroup of the advocacy committee, proposes priorities, which are then reviewed and approved, or they can be modified by the advocacy committee. And following that, the executive committee of the board of directors will look at those. And then finally, the full board of directors in November goes ahead and approves the state and federal legislative priorities. There's so much work that needs to be done in stopping diabetes, and there are so many potential pieces of legislation that could help people with diabetes. And there's also many groups and companies who want our support on their initiatives. And in addition, we're always on the defense, fighting bills that create suspicion that could harm people with diabetes. And to best utilize our resources, it's so key that we make strategic decisions on how we can best reach our advocacy goals. This slide shows the criteria that volunteer advocacy leaders use to determine and rank these legislative priorities. I would really encourage you, if you printed out the legislative and regulatory priority documents that were sent with your meeting confirmation notice, that you might want to refer to that for the next few slides. The list of potential legislative issues or actions is ranked into three tiers, according to the criteria listed on the last slide. Tier one is our highest priority, one that ADA is involved in as a key player, either by leading the efforts or by being a critical partner. Tier two is something that ADA is consistently engaged in, but has less expenditure of resources. We might lead or could be one of many partners in a wider coalition effort. And tier three are activities to which ADA will lend its name, but will not play a major or very proactive role. I think what's incredibly important to remember is, regardless of the tier, each requires significant resources and work from ADA staff and volunteers. So something like Tier 3, which is our lower tier, which a lot of times people think, okay, well, why doesn't ADA just sign on to that? ADA staff needs to look over any of those bills to make sure that there's nothing in there that would be detrimental to people with diabetes. That takes time. So that's why it's incredibly important to remember that when determining the priorities, we need to look at a whole variety of things. So the goal is assigning tier levels. It's to help volunteers and staff in deciding how to respond to the multiple demands for ADA advocacy involvement. And managing the ADA legislative agenda is very much a juggling act. Having a clear set of priorities helps us sort out which demands for attention and action will be addressed. It helps us to make wise decisions and to not rush in foolishly. At this time, I'm going to turn things over to George Huntley, who's the chair of our Legislative and Regulatory Subcommittee, for George to share more information. George?
Well, thank you, Gina. Thank you very much. I'm going to start with a quick weather update because it was minus 14 degrees here in Indianapolis yesterday, and my feet were so blue that I wore blue suede shoes even with the shoes on. It was unbelievably cold here, but we're hoping for a warming trend with the government when we get into do our advocacy efforts. I'm going to start with federal priorities first, then I'll cover the state priorities. Actually, before I do that, I also wanted to touch on the fact that the subcommittee name has changed to Legislative and Regulatory Subcommittee because much of the work we do is actually in the regulatory area as the laws have been passed, and now we're working on actually the implementation of those laws. Before I get into any of the specifics, at the top of the slide, at the top of all of these priorities, is the line, in all areas there's an ongoing commitment to ending health disparities. And that is something that is an overarching theme of everything we do in all of these areas because the bill itself is not necessarily about a health disparity. It's in the implementation of that bill where we can make sure that it is not disproportionately impacting health minority communities. And we are deeply committed to that, regardless of whether it's a Tier 1, 2, or 3. So let's move on to the federal Tier 1 priorities, which are our top priorities. The first piece is in federal funding for research and diabetes prevention programs. This continues to be a major priority. It will be for every year, and we continue to face an extraordinarily difficult fiscal climate. The need to continue to press with the National Institute of Health and the CDC for funding through the appropriations process. That is like banging at a brick wall, but you still have to bang at it, and it's a challenge we continue to face. The National Diabetes Prevention Program is our focus there is to secure funding to support community-based programs that prevent type 2 diabetes. This is a type 2 prevention program that was also part of the Affordable Care Act when it was put into place. In 2014, we also are focusing on the reauthorization of the Special Diabetes Program, and that's a two-tier program, first off to fund type 1 research, and it also includes programs for Native American and Alaskan Native communities. So those are our two special diabetes programs that have been around a long time, and they're real important to us. So when you see things come forward for that, please encourage your groups to weigh in on them. Next area is health insurance, and this is the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. Here, our effort here is to ensure that both the public and private insurance options include and provide access to the services, tools, and education needed to meet the needs of people with diabetes and prediabetes. So we want to make sure, as we're looking at this, whether it's the ACA or Medicaid and Medicare, that we're meeting the needs of people with diabetes and prediabetes. We don't get involved in paying for it. We get involved in whether it's adequate service and adequate care for people with diabetes. Prevention at the federal level, which is a federal priority, our focus is on the primary prevention of type 1, type 2, and gestational diabetes. Now, I will have to say that the committee was indeed all shook up over the addition of type 1 diabetes in this category. This is the first time that we've explicitly listed type 1 prevention in the legislative and regulatory priorities, and a specific reference to type 1 prevention is acknowledging the work we do through the Science and Medicine Department to create a pathway for type 1 prevention through working with the FDA. The FDA actually came to us and asked us to weigh in on what would successful type 1 prevention look like, so when the prevention comes out, they know what benchmark to look at it so they can approve it quickly. And that was a really encouraging and positive move forward. But it does not mean we're ready to prevent type 1, unfortunately. But it is a neat step forward. Discrimination at the last level of type of the Tier 1 priorities. Our focus here is in fighting discrimination and primarily fighting employment discrimination at the federal level. These are things like the motor coach drivers that you were hearing about earlier, and law enforcement, and just really job discrimination. Let's move on to Tier 2. And the Tier 2 priorities for the federal level, first off, is health disparities. Again, there's rarely a bill that's specifically in this area, but we certainly have a priority to support laws and policies specifically focused on reducing disparate impact on minority communities. Also in this area is research and surveillance. Our 2014 focus is regarding research and surveillance. We'll be on supporting expansion of screening diagnosis, data collection, and treatment of women with gestational diabetes and their children. So it's really largely around gestational diabetes. In previous years, you've seen us have stem cell research listed as a priority focus here. However, it's not anticipated that any federal legislative or regulatory changes are going to be made in 2014. And therefore, we have not listed it in this document because this document is intended to be our 2014 work plan, and we don't anticipate anything happening in that for this web. That in no way diminishes our long-term strategic support for funding stem cell research in accordance with our ethical standards. I wanted to be clear on that point. Tier 3 priorities include two categories. The Tier 3 focus does not include blanket support for all bills. This is really to touch on the point that Gina made earlier in the discussion here. We look at every bill that comes forth here. Every bill takes effort to have the staff review to make sure it's in the best interest of people with diabetes. Just because it might have a name with diabetes in it or another does not mean we automatically sign on it. We look to see if it meets certain criteria and if it is, in fact, truly in the best interest of people with diabetes. We're looking at type 3 priorities in the areas of complications and comorbidities, as well as advancing federal coordination on diabetes so that the federal government works and coordinates its efforts in a more efficient fashion. Let's move forward to the state side of the equation. And it's important to recognize that the priority rankings that come through the national committee structure are general in nature. And your actual priorities at the state level are going to be reflecting the individual state needs and should be coordinated through a combination of the advocacy chair, the local staff, and the state advocacy director. So just because everything you're going to see on these next couple of slides are on there, that may not be the area that's top for your particular state. So it's important that we be opportunistic and understand how those how that dialogue works so that we tailor what's the best opportunity for people with diabetes in your state. So first before that is to introduce the seven state advocacy directors, each of whom covers a geographic area of the country, they each have a very broad area, so please don't be cruel to your state advocacy directors. They have a lot on their plate. And even Luis Maldonado, who has the smallest blue section on that slide, has the entire nation in addition to that. So don't hunt him down like a hound dog. I'm sorry, at least you got a sticker out of somebody out of that.
It's Gina.
I appreciate that. I would request that you would, when you're making your presentation to the local board, please share that slide with the board so they understand the areas where your state advocacy director also covers, because that also has opportunities for cooperation across state lines and sharing of best practices. So moving quickly to the state Tier 1 priorities, first in state 1, in Tier 1 in the state is health insurance. And here again, regarding our health insurance, our focus is in two areas. primarily in the Health Affordable Care Act and the Medicaid area, providing access to the services, tools, and education necessary to meet the people's meet the needs of people with diabetes and pre-diabetes. And secondly, we need to defend our previous victories in the state diabetes cost reduction acts that we fought hard on through from the 90s through today. We have that law passed in 46 states and the District of Columbia, and that mandates diabetes coverage in state-regulated insurance plans. It's very important that we don't lose that. Discrimination issues is also a Tier 1 priority at the state level. First and foremost, the Safe at School area, so I would change Jailhouse Rock to Schoolhouse Rock. But we want to ensure that students with diabetes are medically safe, have access to the same educational opportunities as peers without diabetes. The legislation focuses on permitting students who are able to do so to manage their diabetes on their own. And the second is to make sure that trained school personnel are available to perform routine and emergency diabetes care tasks and are on site. The other area in discrimination in Tier 1 are private driver's licenses, and here we simply oppose laws and policies that result in unfair treatment of people with diabetes. So that wraps the Tier 1 for the state. And then moving into Tier 2, the first area being prevention, and here the focus is on primary prevention of type 2. Unfortunately, there's not a type 1 area an opportunity at the state level. And here in type 2, we encourage the expansion of state-level support for primary prevention, often through the CDC programs. Research and surveillance is the other Tier 2 priority. Diabetes prevention and control programs, which are through the CDC and Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, is a mouthful, fund diabetes control programs every state and the District of Columbia. These public health programs monitor diabetes prevalence, implement and evaluate diabetes interventions, and work to increase access to quality diabetes care and treatment and promote public awareness about diabetes. We are encouraging state legislators to protect or increase funding in these programs, as well as other diabetes public health plans and programs. Lastly, in this area, we are supporting bills advancing state coordination on diabetes. Seven states, Illinois, Louisiana, New Jersey, North Carolina, North Dakota, Oregon, and Washington, passed Diabetes Action Plan legislation in 2013. That's a major win. They joined Texas and Kentucky, who had passed it in 2011. So we now have nine states with laws that require the legislature to focus, and legislators and other policymakers, to have strategic steps toward reducing the prevalence of diabetes in their states. The aim is to establish a collaborative process around all of the state agencies responsible for diabetes-related policies so they get an overall strategic look. We're going to continue to encourage states to provide and to approve similar proposals across the country. And moving to Tier 3, lastly on the state level is one area, which is the bills related to complications of diabetes. As at the federal level within the states, each bill is going to be assessed based on its merit, relevance to diabetes, impact, and association policy. All of those things go involved in this, and it takes a fair amount of time. So I appreciate the attention here. I'm now going to transition this and turn the presentation over to Kathy Butler, who has been a hound dog in the Legal Advocacy Subcommittee, to talk about our legal advocacy work to end discrimination. Thank you very much.
Thank you, George, and greetings to everyone from the Lone Star State. Legal advocacy is a huge success story for the association. But as we all know, there's a lot more to do. People living with diabetes can, and sadly do, experience discrimination at every stage and age of life and in all areas of their life. At our national call center, we get between 150 and 250 calls a month from people with diabetes or their family members about unfair treatment. And when a person with diabetes is left on the sidelines, everyone loses. Employers lose out on a great employee. Workers never get a chance to show what they can do. Dancing in their blue suede shoes. Okay, I know it's already been used. And students have a hard time learning because there's no one to help them with their diabetes. The bottom line is that diabetes affects everyone differently. But everyone deserves the chance to come up to the plate and take a swing at the bat. That's what individual assessment is all about. That's what the law requires. The right to be judged as a person and not as a condition. And here's another important concept. By law, any student or worker with a disability like diabetes must be provided with reasonable accommodations or services they need to manage their disease while at school or on the job. Sadly, sometimes we see situations where people aren't even allowed to keep their supplies near them. So what is legal advocacy about? Simply put, it's about fighting for fairness. Where does it happen? Well, we help people with diabetes fight for fairness at work, at school, in public places like restaurants and airports, or even while in police custody or imprisonment. What do? We provide information, we provide training and resources to help prevent or stop discrimination. As the leading authority on diabetes, we are in a unique position to provide people with diabetes, family members, attorneys, employers, schools, public safety officers, and others, with sound information about what it takes to manage diabetes. The scientific and medical side of the association publishes specific standards of care documents that address diabetes medical management in daycares and schools, in the workplace, in correction facilities, and when driving. We provide other resources focusing on the law, helping with people with diabetes know and understand their legal rights, educating schools, employers, and others about diabetes and the legal rights of people with diabetes. Finally, our legal advocates and healthcare professionals work together as a team to create training materials about diabetes, like the two examples shown on this screen. We've got the diabetes care tasks at school and the training video that we use for police officers. These are great efforts that the ADA has done. Having covered the why, where, and what, we're now ready to talk about the how. How do we do legal advocacy? First, we help people with diabetes and their family members understand their legal rights and learn how to advocate for themselves so that they can try their best to resolve the challenges they face and get fair treatment. But that's not always enough. We also bring together a team of content experts with a variety of expertise. Individuals with diabetes, attorneys, and diabetes healthcare professionals. Through our two professional volunteer networks, we've got an attorney network and a healthcare professionals network, we are able to extend our reach throughout the country. Network members count on us to provide the latest resources, as well as a forum for them to ask questions and get expert advice to help them fight discrimination on behalf of their clients or patients. Finally, we have a four-step strategy in our efforts to resolve conflicts with a commitment to resolving problems at the earliest step possible. First one is to educate. So we start with sharing information. We've got a variety of print and online information and training materials aimed at different audiences that help people learn what they need to do about diabetes management, what they need to know about it, and the laws protecting with people with diabetes. Often, once those involved understand diabetes and what the law requires, they agree to more fair treatment. Sometimes people just need a letter, a nice letter pointing out that they're acting based on assumptions and not on facts to get them back on track. Sometimes, however, sharing information alone is not enough, and the association is ready to help there too, with lawyers and healthcare professionals in all areas of the country. We've helped negotiate for fair treatment for thousands of people. And when it's needed, we've helped people sort out whether they want to take a discrimination case to court or to litigate. As you heard earlier, we fought for the bus drivers. We've fought blanket bans in a variety of areas. Cases where people were told it didn't matter how good they are, the fact that they have diabetes was enough to keep them from the job. And that makes all of our blood boil. And sometimes we find the laws don't apply or are unclear, so we go to legislation to fix or strengthen the laws. Over the past decade, we've created a lot of resources for people with diabetes. And you can see some of them here. You can call or you can go online, whichever one you want, to get resources that will help you, your family members, your friends, in a variety of different areas. So you can go to diabetes.org/discrimination, or you can call 1-800-DIABETES. And what we've got is we've got specialized packets of information. It's not one size fits all. We've got packets about school, daycare, employment, police custody, prison, public accommodations, and commercial driver's license issues. And whatever issue you need help with or people you know need help with, we'll send out the information. But also, if the individual who calls our call center feels like they're currently suffering discrimination, we don't just send them a packet of information. We talk to them. And I want to do a shout-out to all those legal advocates who work for the ADA and have provided so many people with diabetes the ability to be what they can be through their hard work. We have got a great staff at the ADA, and we should applaud them. And finally, moving forward, I just wanted to talk about the priorities for legal advocacy. And this year, the first one is promoting legal advocacy at ADA events and through a targeted promotional campaign focusing on our anti-discrimination efforts. We want to raise awareness about our ability to help stop and resolve discrimination. We also want to share our legal advocacy stories and resources at events. Second, we want to increase the ranks, engagement, and impact of trained advocates. We want to recruit and prepare more volunteers, whether they be people who are school advocates, attorneys, or healthcare professionals, to help people in their hometowns with discrimination. And we want to protect the rights of people with diabetes and employment. Continue working to end those blanket bans and make sure people with diabetes are afforded an individual assessment of their ability to do a particular job. Finally, we want to improve treatment of people with diabetes by police and correctional authorities. We have focused in the recent past on educating large police departments and assisting with materials on diabetes and training of police officers on diabetes. Most recently, this has included work with the New York Police Department, the largest in the country, to educate its officers about diabetes. And you saw that they have a video that they've produced, which is just wonderful. Last, but certainly not least, is the Safe at School program. The Safe at School program has long been one of the higher profile initiatives within legal advocacy, but now we're pushing it into even higher gear. There are two main focuses within Safe at School. First, Safe at School legislation and regulatory work to increase the number of states that meet the three main tenets of the campaign. Those are self-management is permitted for students who are capable, non-medical school personnel are permitted to administer insulin, and non-medical school personnel are permitted to administer glucagon. I call those no-brainers. In 2013, we added three states, as you heard, Arizona and Missouri were legislative victories, and California was achieved through litigation, an 8-year legal battle in the courts. Our goal is to add at least 3 more states this year. And the second tenet is policies that segregate students with diabetes. Sadly, what we've seen is that some areas, they are trying to force students with diabetes to all go to the same school, even if it's miles away from the school that their friends and their siblings go to, and that's just wrong. And we are working hard to combat that. We'll do this legislatively, through litigation, and through collaboration with federal government agencies such as the Department of Justice and the Department of Education. Thank you so much for your attention. And now I'll turn the presentation over to Scott Hines, who is the chair of our Volunteer Engagement Work Group, to talk about our Advocates in Action efforts in 2014. Take it away, Scott.
Thank you, Kathy, and greetings from Washington State, the better Washington. And George, you're our resident musical expert, but if I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe Elvis is considered the godfather of grunge music. So as we dig into my portion, among the handouts that you received with your reminder email today was the 2014 Advocates in Action calendar. And I know you probably won't have time to discuss each month's activities in your CLB meeting, but you should share the printed calendar, and if time allows, you might briefly highlight your local plans for 2 to 3 of the month's activities. And I won't take time to go through the calendar activities in detail now. Rather, I'd like to share with you the slides that we recommend you share with your CLBs to help them understand how they can support your hometown calendar activities. But before I get into that, I'm going to provide you with a little bit of background. And it's amazing to realize, but we're now beginning our 5th year with this initiative. And it's been really rewarding to witness the growth in our capacity to support our state and federal initiatives, and also to bring advocacy into the room at our local events. And we've used it to inform and inspire, recruit and engage, and we've let people know how advocacy makes a real difference for people with diabetes. The Advocates in Action calendar is designed to mobilize diabetes advocates throughout the year. We use it to support goals of the 2013-2015 strategic plan, to advance the association's public policy objectives, and to identify and engage new advocacy leaders. Each month lists specific calls to action that are locally focused. And while some activities are tied to a particular month, others are not. So what we'd really like you to focus on is each goal of an activity and how you could cover it some way during the year in a way that makes sense to your calendar and your unique community. Each month, specific training and resources are provided to support hometown implementation of these calls to action. The trainings and resources are freely available, and many of them are online. And they're available to any volunteer or staff advocacy leader. Our Hometown Advocacy Online Library of Resources can be accessed at www.diabetes.org/hometownadvocacy. And my final word on the calendar is for those of you who are new to the Advocacy Chair role. If you haven't seen this calendar before, I really encourage you to reach out to both your local market executive director and your state advocacy director to arrange for a call or a face-to-face meeting to discuss how Yield Market will support the 2014 activities. For the next 2 slides, I'll cover what I'd like you to share with your CLB members to help them know what to do to support your hometown advocates in action efforts. Most of you are familiar with my first tip for support, and many of you have already used it in your own CLB strategic alignment planning process. And that tip is to use the strategic alignment planning tool. That'll help you write your CLB's annual strategic alignment goals, and you can access that planning tool at www.diabetes.org/annual-planning. Building advocacy and committee structure is another recommendation. Because one person can't do it all, I highly encourage you to recruit for diverse talents and to spread the workload. Participate in advocacy webinars. That will help to build local capacity. Choose one that is related to other work you do on the CLB. This next one is incredibly important. Tell your diabetes stories to elected officials. That is one of the best ways to help impact those legislative priorities that George just covered a few minutes ago. And we have a training in July, and I encourage you to participate in that training and then get out and contact your elected officials. Ongoing Safe at School outreach to parents and schools, and you can learn more about that in our June webinar. The tips for support on this slide are more narrowly focused on two specific CLB positions. Event chairs, we recommend that you start early in event planning process and think about including advocacy at every event, again, to inspire, recruit, engage, and inform participants and donors. And also mark your calendar for that February webinar to learn about ideas and resources for making the most of advocacy at your event. And for our communications chairs, support getting out advocacy messages through traditional and social media, and increase local media presence. And you can do that by writing letters to the editor and op-eds using association talking points and supports, and also reposting or retweeting association advocacy messages and alerts. And in May, we'll have a webinar that's specifically focused on media outreach. And now I'll turn it back to Gina, who will talk about some legal issues to keep in mind with respect to advocacy on behalf of the association.
Thanks so much, Scott. Oops, sorry about that. I think I'm on the wrong slide here. There we go. Thanks so much, Scott, and thanks for sharing your tips on what CLB members can do to support our advocacy efforts. And I'm going to take a few minutes to talk about a few things that our advocates, when representing the American Diabetes Association, cannot do. We have to keep in mind that ADA is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization, and we do have our 501c3 tax status. And what this means is we cannot endorse candidates, nor can we show preferential treatment to a political party. But what we need to remember is that we can, and we really need to make sure that we are giving our issues preferential treatment, that we meet with public officials, and that we invite public officials to our events. But if you're doing that, it's incredibly important to remember to work with advocacy staff before you do so, just to make sure that we're following all of the rules. So it's always better to ask someone from the ADA staff prior to making an ask to whoever that legislator might be. Finally, in closing up your presentation to your CLB, we want to make sure that you end with a strong, specific appeal for each CLB member to sign up as a diabetes advocate. What I've learned over the years is I've developed a lot of friendships with our CLB members, and it takes a while for people to actually figure out and get a better understanding of what advocacy is. What I've also learned over the years is when you make a specific ask specifically to a person, there's a much greater chance that they're going to do something or to take action. So what we want to do is we want to make sure that we speak directly to our CLB members about the importance of their own personal engagement. We want to make sure that they understand why it's incredibly crucial to speak up about diabetes and public policies. And we also need to make sure that they know that many elected officials don't view diabetes as a serious issue. So we need to make sure that we have everybody on board advocating in whatever way they can to help advance our priorities and our initiatives. And we also want to make sure that we let our fellow CLB members know how easy it can be. We can say something like, the first step to getting your voice heard is by signing up at the ADA Advocacy Action Center, which can be accessed online at diabetes.org/takeaction. And then it's also really important to directly ask those CLB members to sign up as an advocate, but also to respond to the action alerts, and then to forward those alerts to friends and to repost on social media. Sometimes it'll take a little bit of extra time to explain what an action alert looks like, that they're very easy to do, that they can be sent as is, or that they can be personalized, that either way to send is completely appropriate and very much needed. But make sure you remember that a lot of times people don't really have the understanding that we do on what advocacy is. So to make sure that we're talking to them in a way that they're understanding and that they feel comfortable that they're able to get involved and take action. It's also really important to recruit those hometown advocates. So when we speak to the CLB about recruiting other advocates, we want to let them know that they can play a key role in building the local advocacy capacity and support by recruiting other people. So we want to share specific strategies for actively recruiting others to become advocates. The biggest way to do that is to make sure that there's a way for people to sign up to be an advocate and that this is done at every single ADA event in our hometowns. We also want to make sure that we're working to help build our grass tops connections. And by doing this, we're identifying community members who have relationships. Those are those personal relationships with members of Congress, the administration, their state legislators, and also the governors of their states. And help recruit healthcare professionals for ADA's Healthcare Professional Legal Advocacy Network and also lawyers for the Advocacy Attorney Network using business cards that are pictured here. And then also associated talking documents are distributed will also be distributed. In addition to the annual update at the beginning of the year, please keep advocacy in front of your CLB members all year round. Keep talking about what you're doing. Keep highlighting our 2013 successes and keep talking about what our 2014 plans and priorities are. You'd be surprised how much you can get people involved the more you talk about it and the more they understand what's going on. Direct requests, like we said, are incredibly important to get people involved. And finally, at the end of your presentation, make sure you have enough time for questions and make sure you share your own contact information. Make sure you share the ADA's web address and also the phone number for the Center for Information and Community Support. And I think what's incredibly important to remember, too, is you don't have to be an expert on everything, and you're not expected to know everything about advocacy. So if somebody asks you a question that you don't know, don't worry about it. Let them know that you're not sure, that you'll get in contact with somebody to get the answer, and that you'll get back to them. And that provides, number one, the right information for the person, and it also allows you an opportunity for a follow-up. So please give yourself permission not to know everything. That's perfectly fine. It's then taking the next step to get that information and report it back. And in closing, on a personal note, advocacy is always on my mind, as I hope it's always on yours. And as we move forward working together in 2014, we will continue to make a big difference. And I can't thank you enough for everything that everybody does. And at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Marin for our question and answer and our wrap-up.
Thanks, Gina. Well, thanks to those of you who have submitted questions to the chat box. I know some of you have had your answers, gotten your answers already through the chat box function. But right now, I just want to encourage you to submit any additional questions that you have. And I'm going to ask, actually, LaShawn, to open up her phone line. I believe you're still on the line, LaShawn, and you can just press *7. As I might have predicted, we have quite a number of questions related to ACA and implementation. And so I think we'll just start right out with you. LaShawn, are you on the line? Just press *7.
Hi, LaShawn McKeever is on the line.
Great. Okay, so now, let's start out with a question from Kathy Brown. And, you know, she's saying that they're getting a lot of questions from people whose insurance rates or co-pays have gone up in costs for insulin and so forth. And they want to know what ADA is doing, you know, the people do, what ADA is doing to help people address this financial hardship on people with diabetes. I think, you know, kind of inherent in that question is, you know, what do we as local staff or as local volunteers who are getting bombarded with these questions, what can we say in response to those kinds of questions? And
sure.
Where can we direct folks?
Sure. So as you all probably have noticed, there have been some issues as the administration is rolling out different pieces of the Affordable Care Act. What we have been asking people to do is if there's specific situations that you'd like to share with us to give us examples of some of the issues that people are experiencing, to definitely pass that information on along to us. You can do that through our call center. You can do that through contacting, for example, just to share some of the personal story so that we can share that with our contacts with the administration to let them know what we're hearing from the diabetes community. We don't take individual, we don't have the capacity to handle individual cases per se, but we do encourage people to reach out to their local, there's different websites that each state will have that will give them information about what to do within your state. You can go to our website, which is our diabetes.org website, and we have the insurance documents that were referenced earlier in the conversation where you can get information on how you can find out what's happening in your state through the healthcare.org website. But we're going to continue to monitor the implementation of the Affordable Care Act this year. Much of the regulatory work has been done in terms of setting the foundation for moving forward with pieces of it. But, of course, as it's rolling out, we're hearing of the different issues that people are having. And so, you know, to that point, if there are things that you want to make us aware of, please contact us so we can take that information in consideration as we work on the advocacy around this issue.
Thank you, LaShawn. And just stay on the line because there are a couple of other questions for you, too. This is from Ho Tran in California, and she submitted this when she registered. Could you speak a little bit to the impact of, you know, ACA in the care of diabetes within minority populations specifically?
So there are many different pieces of the ACA that addresses diabetes or issues for people with diabetes in minority communities. I mean, one of the biggest pieces that I would, I guess, bring to light in the conversation is it increases access to care. Many of the populations that we work with that are from high-risk communities, people have either inadequate care or either they don't have care or they have inadequate care. And so through the Affordable Care Act, one of the huge wins is now people that previously may not have been able to afford insurance or have insurance will have opportunities to access insurance. But then there's so many other protections and benefits through the Affordable Care Act that people from high-risk communities can benefit from. So, you know, there's different preventive services that are covered at no charge through the Affordable Care Act in terms of the discriminatory practices of insurance companies in the past. Those things, as of 2014, are no longer permissible. So, for example, if a person is diagnosed with diabetes, they can't be denied coverage now, which, of course, is a huge thing, or be dropped from their coverage because of their diagnosis. And so those are some things that come to mind. There were many other health equity pieces that were included that have to do with the administration itself. So now in every agency there's an office of minority health that addresses minority health issues, and that's been a huge win for minority communities. So those are some of the things that I would highlight in terms of how it impacts disparately impacted communities.
Thank you. And then another question that's really kind of related and underlies what you were just talking about in terms of Ho's question, and this is from Jerry Brown, and he is just asking, you know, when Eduardo was talking about health disparities, I get the sense that that's maybe a term that isn't, I know it's not familiar to a lot of people, and so could you just provide some examples of health disparities in a concrete way for folks who are on the phone and may not be familiar with that term?
Sure. So when we talk about health disparities, what we're talking about relates to how there are people with diabetes, as we know. However, some communities may have diabetes but experience different outcomes. So, for example, one thing I'll highlight are amputation rates, for example. So in some communities, there are people that have higher rates of amputations than others, and there may not necessarily be a genetic cause for that or something of that nature that's leading to the amputation, but it's because of other issues where they're disparately impacted. So, for example, the access to health care in their community may be it may be less accessible for a person from what we term as a high-risk community, or in terms of people being able to manage their diabetes through, if we look at diet, for example, if you come from a community where you don't have access to healthy food options, yet, you know, as a person living with diabetes, you know, you have to be very careful about the different things that you eat and how all of those things play into your overall health, they're at a disadvantage because they can't go to the store, or they may not have the resources to go to the store and buy the things that they would need to help manage their disease. And so when we talk about disparities, we talk about how, you know, someone may have diabetes just as someone else from one community. However, because of different factors, they're not able to have the same outcome as someone, you know, from a different, whether it's race or socioeconomic status or community.
Thank you. You know, I always think of it as kind of at least a triple hit. And one is, you know, there are disparities in terms of certain populations are, first of all, more likely to be diagnosed. And then, second of all, have less access to care or, you know, good food choices or opportunities to get out and get exercise. And then the triple thing is that, you know, probably because of number two, partially, that there are higher complication rates as well. So hope that helps. Okay, and now there's a question for Katie Hathaway, and this is from Nancy Hostetter in North Dakota. And her question is, where does one really start to get safe at school in the state level?
That's a challenging question. I don't know North Dakota's laws off the top of my head, but one place to start is to find out what the situation is in your state, and so we can share that with you. I think if there are individual problems, we would start by trying to address those and see if there are trends, if depending on what the state law says, what might need to be fixed. What are the resources in the state? What other factors are there politically and coalition support? But I think if you're talking about statewide change, that's something that will probably take some time to develop. If there are individuals that you know of, the best thing to do is to send them to us at 1-800-DIABETES, and we will work with all of them individually to fix those specific problems. But there's probably not one single starting point except to start the conversation with us.
Thank you, Katie.
Sure.
And I'm just going to hop right back to LaShawn again. I just see that Jerry Brown has a follow-up question. I think I can address some of this, but I'd like, LaShawn, for you to be on the line just to back me up and in case I'm missing something. But Jerry was saying, aren't the issues that you and I described more socioeconomic issues than minority issues? And my understanding is that they really are both. There certainly is, you know, an effect based on socioeconomic status. But over and above that, there are genetic issues that have been shown to be in play with respect to risk for the disease or even risk for complications. Is that right, LaShawn, and is there more that you'd want to add to that?
I would agree. There are a lot of different things that go into addressing disparities. You asked for a concrete example, so I thought that would be probably one of the more tangible examples, but as Maren mentioned, there are a number of factors that are in play when it relates to how one population may experience the disease differently from another population. I would just agree with what Maren said, there are a number of factors, but the example I specifically presented did more so indicate
the socioeconomic piece of it, which does play a huge factor in terms of some of the major disparities that we do see.
Thank you. And just last call for any other questions, submit them now through the chat box. And while I'm just waiting for that, I just want to remind you all that please stay on once we end here. And there's a survey, and at the end of the survey, you will get that shorter version of the slides that we presented today. That's really what we want you to use and adapt as you need to for your own community leadership board presentations. In addition to the slides themselves, you'll also get talking points, so it'll be fully scripted for you to use as much as you want to or need to. And then you'll also have the handouts that we'd like you to give out to each of your community leadership board members. And just got another question about, is there a recording of this meeting available? Yes, there will be. The slight challenge that we have is that right now we're undergoing a transition to a new website, so I'm not entirely sure how quickly we can get that posted. We typically post that at diabetes.org/hometownadvocacy. But I'm pretty sure if I can't get it posted there, I can at least pull off the audio recording and send folks the full slide set so that you could kind of do a DIY webinar, if you will. So we'll make sure that, you know, we either get it posted online or provide it to you in the other way. And we should be able to know about that in the next day or two. So and we'd let you know through the listserv. So with that, I'd just like to say a big thank you to our presenters, but to everybody on the line for taking time out of your busy schedule. So we've heard from the king. And now it's time for us to wrap up here. And I'd just like to remind you to stay on so that you can fill out the survey. And thanks again, and have a great evening.
Thank you. Please stand by.